welcome to KPFK's Middle East in Focus. News and views on the Middle East that are unreported or underreported and sometimes misreported. My name is Don Bastani. Today we'll revisit a subject that comes up every year on MEIF around the 8th of June, because it was on that date in 1967 that a U.S. Navy spy ship, the USS Liberty, was attacked by the Israeli Air Force and Navy. That was during the Six-Day War that Israel launched upon three Arab states, Egypt, Jordan, and Syria. Israel says it mistook the American ship for an Egyptian ship, while the surviving crew members of the Liberty have been trying to tell the world that the Israelis knew they were attacking an American ship. So with us today, we have a federal judge who tells the Israeli side of the story and two Liberty crewmen who tell their side. The reason I'm doing the story now, instead of waiting for the anniversary in June, is the recent publication of a book titled The Liberty Incident, written by A.J. Crystal. That's initial A, middle name J.A.Y., and last name Crystal. Mr. Crystal is a lawyer, a former Navy aviator, and member of the Judge Advocate General Corps. He retired as a captain in the Navy Reserve and is now a federal judge in Florida. From his office in Miami, he's on the line with us. Judge Crystal, welcome to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us by phone from his home in Washington State is James M. Ennis, Jr., the ship's officer above the USS Liberty, aboard the USS Liberty, above decks, I guess is what I was thinking, when Israel attacked it. Mr. Ennis is also the author of the book Assault on the Liberty, first published in 1980 and updated and reissued last year. It's regarded by many as the official history of the incident. Jim Ennis, welcome to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Halfway through the show, Jim, we'll have a changing of the guard. You'll sit back and listen while your shipmate, Signalman Joe Medders, joins us. Jim, have you and Judge Crystal ever talked or exchanged letters?
Briefly years ago.
Okay. Let me start us off by giving a very brief outline of what happened on June 8, 1967. That was the fourth day of the Six-Day War. The USS Liberty was an intelligence-gathering ship, bristling with all kinds of radio antennas. It had a crew of just under 300 men. It was cruising at the east end of the Mediterranean, 13 miles off the coast of Egypt's Sinai Peninsula. During the morning, Israeli warplanes appeared and spent some time surveilling the Liberty. Then they attacked with machine guns, cannon, and napalm. Then an Israeli patrol boat hit the Liberty with a torpedo, but the ship stayed afloat. At the end of the day, 34 Americans had been killed. The disagreement by my guests is not whether the Israelis attacked the Liberty, but whether or not they knew they were attacking an American ship. For the obvious reason that we have only a half hour to present a clear picture, I'm going to ask you, gentlemen, to please let your comments be brief and to the point. Judge Crystal, the Liberty crew say the Israelis knew, and the Israelis say they did not know it was an American ship. What's your position on that?
Well, Don, you said that I'm here to present the Israeli position, which is not correct. I studied the 10 official U.S. investigations, the 3 Israeli investigations, and my own investigation all came to the same conclusion that it was a tragic mistake, which position has been accepted by Presidents Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and present President Bush as of October of last month. There are about 36 different conspiracy stories about the incident, more perhaps than about the assassination of JFK, but when you study them, they don't hold up. It was a tragedy, and I don't think there's much question about it, notwithstanding that American public loves conspiracy, and so the conspiracy stories stay alive.
Okay, so then you believe that the Israelis honestly thought they were attacking an Egyptian ship and not an American ship.
Well, not necessarily an Egyptian ship, an enemy ship. They were part of the time. They thought it was an Egyptian ship. At one point, they even thought, after they'd attacked it, they thought they'd attacked a Russian ship. It was a very confusing situation, and you can look at that in the appendix to my book, Appendix 2 to the Liberty Incident, where I've got all the radio transmissions from the Israeli pilots and their ground controllers. Makes it pretty clear what happened.
Okay. Jim Ennis, why are you so sure the Israelis knew they were attacking an American ship. Where
well,
were you?
I quarreled totally with almost everything that Judge Crystal says. For one thing, Don, the Israelis circled us at very, very close level during the morning on 8 different occasions. They circled us 13 times at very low level. On almost every occasion, our intercept pilots heard their pilots radioing back to their headquarters saying, this is an American ship. There are messages recorded in which the Israeli pilots reported they saw our flag, they see men on deck. After the attack, the pilots were intercepted, identifying the ship as American. During the attack, they identified us as American.
Jim, when you say intercepted, do you mean that their radio communications were intercepted?
That's right. The radio communications with the Israeli pilots and their headquarters.
So you heard them conversing between the warplanes and the headquarters.
They have been intercepted by American intercept pilots.
Okay.
Intercept operators who heard and translated from the Hebrew.
Okay. Not intercepted by American planes, but by radio operators.
By radio operators as far away as Germany.
Okay. That's pretty good. Jim Ennis, where were you during the aerial surveillance, and where were you when the attack began?
I was off the deck on the ship from about 7 in the morning until noon, so I witnessed personally the orbit of the ship, and I was back on the bridge. I had just been relieved as officer of the deck when the firing started.
You said you were surveilled at low level. What does low level mean to a landlubber like me?
I mean, some of the pilots came so close that we thought they might hit the mast. I mean, they were very, very low. They were so low, Don, that the deck plating rattled.
So you're talking about, like, in football field distances, you know, what, 20 or 30 yards?
50 yards? Less, yeah.
Okay.
So close that we could see the rivets that held the airplane together. Very, very low.
Which means that, you know, at that distance, 100 yards, 200 yards, you can recognize human beings.
Absolutely. We could see the pilots in the cockpit.
And they could see you.
And they could see us.
What else could they see? How would they know that you were not an enemy ship?
Well, they saw our flag, and we heard them radioing their headquarters, telling their headquarters that this ship has an American flag. We heard them radioing that we see men in bathing suits, sunbathing on deck. That's
mm-hmm.
close.
Judge Crystal, Judge A.J. Crystal in Miami, I have to ask you this, sir. What enables you to say to dozens of surviving crewmen who were there that they're wrong in believing that Israel deliberately attacked them?
Well, sir, Mr. Ennis has a memory what happened 35 years ago. I would suggest that perhaps more accurate is the memory of the people who were on the bridge of the ship, the captain of the ship, and the various other ship's officers who were on the bridge at the time, who testified before the U.S. Navy Court of Inquiry, and whose testimony is entirely different than Mr. Ennis's memory today. Also, the only radio intercept information that is available that I'm aware of at the present time are the Israeli audio tapes, which I've published in my book. Mr. Ennis refers to these tapes of hearing these things, but there is no there are no such tapes available anywhere, nor transcripts of them, nor copies of messages related to them. And I would suggest that anyone read my book, The Liberty Incident, and read his book, and it's a free country after you see all the material. Make up your own mind.
Okay.
Don, another independent author who is more objective than Judge Crystal has reviewed that same material, a man by the name of Aaron Bregman, who has concluded exactly the opposite of what Judge Crystal
I've
I'm also in touch with about a half a dozen intercept operators who also heard those conversations, and they all agree with us that those conversations prove that the attack was, in fact, deliberate. They knew they were attacking Americans.
Mm-hmm.
If you read that Aaron Bregman book, Mr. Bregman comes to his conclusion by interpreting the tone of the voice of someone who said, what are you saying? I don't think that Mr. Bregman's interpretation is particularly valid, but again, look at the tape translations. They're in Appendix 2 of the Liberty Incident. You can read them for yourself, and if they convince you that it was an intentional attack, bless you.
Gentlemen,
I've read them, and there are some critical parts missing, such as responses from the headquarters, in which the headquarters tells their pilots, I don't want to hear that.
Gentlemen,
how come you cut that out of the intercept?
Gentlemen, excuse me. There's a question that I know our listeners are urging me to ask. That has to do with personal views and attitudes, sociological, political, etc. Jim Ennis, let me ask you, has anyone ever accused you of being anti-Semitic?
There's an automatic assumption that anybody who writes that this was deliberate is anti-Semitic. Yes, I've been accused of that.
Well,
it's silly.
Yeah, we reject the notion that criticism of Israel is per se anti-Semitism. We reject that notion. So
I agree with you.
Okay, that's the judge agreeing with that. Jim Ennis, what was your attitude toward the State of Israel on the morning of the attack before any Israeli planes had appeared?
Oh, we were supportive. We were cheering for Israel until they killed 34 of us.
Uh-huh. Judge Crystal, can we explore your relationship with Israel? First, are you Jewish?
Yes.
And are you pro-Zionist or non-Zionist?
I'm pro-American. I'm an American citizen, and my religion has very little to do, or nothing to do with my opinions. I personally believe that the relationship between the United States and Israel is a benefit to the United States and has been and continues to be. And my interest was developed as a naval aviator, a Navy lawyer, a lecturer in the law of naval warfare on behalf of the Department of Defense. And I started out in with an open mind. I initially contacted Mr. Ennis in 1988 to try and develop the story from his point of view. But in a letter that he wrote me on July 16, 1988, he said that he didn't have the time to be involved in talking to me, but would answer two questions. I wrote him those two questions. He hasn't answered them yet, but my perspective is, I hope, according to my training, an objective perspective.
Mm-hmm. Judge Crystal, I take it you've been to Israel?
Don made a number of trips to Israel and researched.
Yeah, Jim, please hang on a second. Let me explore this point, because I know listeners are wondering about this kind of thing. Judge, you were just answering whether you'd been in Israel?
Yes, sir. As I said, I made quite a number of trips to Israel, also to Egypt, also to England, and all over the United States. It turned out to be a very interesting and stimulating project, and I enjoyed it very much. I got to meet people I would have not normally met, Secretary of State Dean Rusk, Secretary McNamara, Admiral McDonald, Admiral Martin, Admiral Kidd.
Judge, when you went to Israel and to other places, did you go at your own expense, or were you someone's guest?
Everything I have done has been at my own expense. I think that on one occasion, I think I was bought a Coca-Cola by someone. But aside from that, it's been all my own expense.
Okay, the Coca-Cola doesn't count, nor would Pepsi-Cola have counted. I have to say that to give them both equal time. Do you have relatives or friends in Israel?
Now I have a large number of friends. Most of the people that I met, both in Israel, in the United States, and in England, became my friends as I worked with them and queried them and interviewed them. And many of them remain friends today. Most of them, they became my friends as a result of this inquiry.
Mm-hmm. Jim Ennis, go ahead, please, before I do our ID.
Don, we need to talk about those 10 investigations that Judge Crystal is so fond of quoting.
Okay.
The fact is, the only investigation that interviewed Liberty crewmen was the USS Liberty Navy Court of Inquiry. The others were drawn from that. I have a letter from the Navy Judge Advocate General that tells us that the Navy Court of Inquiry didn't examine whether or not the attack was deliberate. They left that to the Department of State and Congress, which overlooked it.
Congress has never investigated this?
They never inquired into whether or not the attack was deliberate. The Navy has told us.
Has there Has there ever been an incident in which Americans were killed like this that the Congress has not investigated?
Never. And but all these other investigations that Crystal's so fond of citing were little more than inquiries into other things, such as the adequacy of communications, or were summaries of the Navy Court of Inquiry, such as the Clark Clifford Report. These weren't investigations at all. They were totally unrelated to the question of culpability, which is the key question. And it's vital to mention that the Court of Inquiry itself has been totally discredited by its own legal counsel, who has told us and told Navy Times that the Court of Inquiry was a fraud. They concluded falsely that the attack was an accident, when the president of the court and the legal counsel believed that it was, in fact, deliberate. They falsely reported because they were told to do so.
Jim, at this point, I'm going to give you shore leave and bring in your shipmate, Signalman Joe Metters. You're listening to Steadfastly Independent KPFK, radio for the thinking listener in Southern California, in Los Angeles at FM 90.7, and in Santa Barbara at FM 98.7. The program is Middle East in Focus. My name is Don Bastani. We're speaking with Judge A.J. Crystal, and have been speaking with James M. Ennis, Jr. Judge Crystal, Judge Crystal's book, The Liberty Incident, contradicts the conclusions of Jim Ennis's book, Assault on the Liberty. We've been talking about Joe Metters, who would be coming up after Jim Ennis, who just left us. Joe Metters was a signalman aboard the USS Liberty, and was there aboard the ship, a member of the crew, on June 8, 1967. Hello, Joe. Welcome to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you very much for having us.
I believe you're acquainted with Judge Crystal.
Yeah, we've met in the past.
Okay. Where were you when the Israeli aircraft first appeared?
When they first appeared, I was down in the pilot house. So we had just secured from a general quarters drill.
You couldn't see them from the pilot house, could you?
No, we couldn't, but somebody was looking on their radar screen. We have a surface search radar, and they were low enough to be to appear on the surface search radar.
Whoa. How low does a plane have to be picked up by the surface radar?
I really don't know. I'm not that technically inclined, but I assume it's fairly low.
Did you go up on deck to see them?
As soon as we saw the aircraft on the radar, we had a bunch of us ran up to the signal bridge, the highest level on the ship, to view what we thought would be just another circling of the ship, because it's been circled so many times during the morning.
Okay.
So a bunch of us ran up there, and I witnessed the aircraft come in very low on up our starboard side. And as soon as they got just a little in front of the ship, what they did is they turned left in what I thought would be just another circling of the ship, but they got immediately ahead of the ship, turned directly left, or immediately left, and started strafing. So when the attack started.
So you were on deck when the attack began?
Yes, I was.
Okay, let me ask you this. Before the attack, when you just, saw Israeli warplanes surveilling or buzzing or whatever, flying near the USS Liberty, what was your attitude and what had been your attitude toward Israel?
You mean politically?
Yeah, politically.
Well, I didn't have any problems with them. They're another country, just have as much right to exist as any other country, so I didn't have any problems.
Any attitudes about the Arab-Israeli conflict?
No, they've been fighting off and on for, I don't know, perhaps thousands of years. You know, it's just another instance of them going to war. Each of them have their own positions.
Uh-huh. They've been fighting only since the beginning of the century.
Okay, well.
Yeah, I know, it's an important issue that comes up frequently. The Arabs and Jews coexisted quite peacefully for hundreds of years. The Jews in Arab societies were Arabs of the Jewish faith and were not persecuted, although they were a minority, as were the Christians. The persecution of Jews over the centuries was a game that European Christians played, not Muslims. So, but that's another show, but that's just a simple fact there. So the attack began. Did you have any sense of whether the pilots in the Israeli planes recognized you as an American ship? Any impression of that?
In the attacking plane?
Yes.
No, I didn't. I wouldn't have any idea if they did or not. I didn't hear any of the radio traffic.
Okay. That was somebody else's job, apparently.
Yeah.
Did you have any impression when during the time they were surveilling, the surveillance planes?
A couple of the times when the aircraft flew over, one of the times at least, the aircraft flew so low that the props rattled the deck plating on the ship, and we waved at the pilots, and the pilots waved back. So we were kind of glad that they were there, to tell you the truth, because we knew they were an ally.
Well, so you knew they were Israelis at that time?
Yeah, some of the ones that I observed, you know, you could see some of the markings.
Did they know you were Americans?
I'm told from talking to some of the people that were listening that they were overhearing the radio traffic between the proud pilots and their home base.
Was an American flag flying on the ship?
Oh, absolutely. That was my job.
Oh, that was your job?
Yeah.
And what happened to the flag? Was it? I heard one account that it was shot off.
Yeah, apparently during the air attack, it had been shot down. It was flying from the gaff. It was a regular steaming ensign. It was flying from the gaff. And what happened was when I was, the attack started, so I ran down to the pilot house, and every once in a while I would stick my head out of the port wing of the, go out to the port wing of the bridge to make sure that the flag was flying, and just to make sure it was, because that basically was my job. There was a leading signalman, Russell David, and I hadn't seen him just before the attack, so I didn't know where he was, so I was just sticking my head out to make sure that the flag was flying. I noticed one of my trips out there that it was had been shot down, so Frank Brown and I went up to the port wing of the bridge and got the largest flag we could find in the locker there, the Holiday Colors, ran up to the signal bridge and put it up on number 4 halyard on the port side, because that was the only halyard that we had available. The halyard to the gaff had been shot away.
Okay, so the first flag that was shot away was replaced by a larger American flag. Is that what you're saying?
The largest one we had.
Was it larger than the one that had been shot down?
Yeah, it was a couple times larger.
Oh.
What we call holiday color.
Okay. Let me go to Judge Crystal now. Judge, if it were true that Israel made an honest mistake and truly thought it was other than an American ship that it was attacking, why was the Liberty crew ordered not to speak of the incident?
The Liberty crew wasn't ordered not to speak of the incident. Immediately after it occurred, there was a great deal of sensitivity about what was taking place. In particular, the United States had said publicly on the floor of the United Nations that we had no ships or planes within hundreds of miles, and it was somewhat of an embarrassment. Cyrus Vance, the Undersecretary of State, issued an order that there would be no press releases from any source but Washington until after the Court of Inquiry was completed. About 10 days later, it was completed, and there has been no restriction ever since, notwithstanding the fact that many of those claims are made. I know of no one who's ever been disciplined, prosecuted, or anything else in connection with quite a mountain or a sea of commentary from various crew members and others about what took place.
Mm-hmm. Let's ask Joe Meadors if you, Joe, or any shipmates that you know of were ordered not to speak of the incident.
Well, sure. When I got back to Malta after my trip from Liberty to the Little Rock, for some medical stuff to take care of my wounds, and then we went back to Malta, and I arrived there the afternoon of the day, the morning of the ship arrived there. Quarters every day that we were told, when the Court of Inquiry was taking place, that we weren't to talk to anybody, and under, penalty of prosecution by the military authorities.
What were the prosecution before?
Disobeying
orders. Okay, gotcha.
No, was
anyone ever prosecuted, Joe?
No, that's not the point. We were told not to.
Apparently you obeyed the orders?
For a while, yeah. While I was in the military, I did, until I read Jim's book and started doing some research.
Well, they don't apply. Such orders don't apply to civilians.
Well, I don't know if they do or not. So they haven't done anything to us. I don't know if anybody else will agree with Jay that we have. Nobody that I know of has been prosecuted for talking about it.
Uh-huh.
But we were told not to say anything. And then once the Court of Inquiry report was finished, then we were told that we were to just basically parrot back what the report said.
It's been charged by some, and I'm just an observer reflecting what I hear and read, that Court of Inquiry was a device to suppress testimony that Israel had deliberately attacked an American ship. I'd like to hear your view on that, Judge Crystal.
Well, the Court of Inquiry was conducted by Admiral Isaac C. Kidd, Jr., one of the greatest admirals in the history of our Navy, along with two highly distinguished captains in the Navy. The Court of Inquiry record contains 155 pages of sworn testimony of the crew members of the Liberty, including Captain McGonigal, who tragically is now deceased, but a fine gentleman. And his testimony is there. He was asked when he testified, go back, talk to all of your crew members, put together a chronology of what happened with input from your officers and your men, and bring it back the next day, which he did, and it was added to the record of the Court of Inquiry. And that Court of Inquiry was endorsed by Admiral John McCain, the father of our present Senator McCain, with a finding that it conclusively established the fact that it was a case of tragic case of mistaken identity.
Yeah, Judge, I'm sure that you followed part of the life of Captain McGonigal, and before he died a couple of years ago, it was made known, and he said publicly that the attack was deliberate, in his opinion.
No, I don't think that's what he said. I've read his letter, and he wrote a letter in one of the last years of his life. But about the first 30-some years, he said he wanted to believe it was a mistake, and then he began wondering if it was, and he said that there should be more disclosure from both the U.S. and Israeli governments. The Israeli governments, as far as I know, have released the audio tapes of their pilot and controller transmissions, and I'm struggling right now to try and get the release of the National Security Agency tapes, which will verify the Israeli tapes.
Okay, folks, you're going to have to go to the books to get more, because it's complicated, and we've given you what we can in this short program. Our guests have been Judge A.J. Crystal, federal judge and author of The Liberty Incident, published last year by Brassey's, and you can get it or inquire about it at www.thelibertyincident.com. Our guest in the first half of the show was Jim Ennis, ship's officer aboard the Liberty when it was attacked by Israel, and author of Assault on the Liberty, updated last year, and you can get that at Amazon.com. And our other guest is Joe Medders of Corpus Christi, Texas, signalman aboard the Liberty. Joe, the Liberty Survivors Association website is
www.usslibertycom.
Okay, USSLiberty as one word, .com. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This Saturday, February 1st, an Israeli peace activist is speaking here in Los Angeles. Maybe you know her, Susie Mordecai, the daughter of Holocaust survivors. She was raised in Israel, where she became active in several human rights groups, and is here to tell us why there's a need for human rights groups in Israel and occupied Palestine. Susie Mordecai at 7 o'clock this Saturday night, February 1st at Workman's Circle. That's on South Robertson Boulevard, four blocks south of Pico Boulevard. For more information and directions, call this number, area code 323-993-3332. That's 323-993-3332. And tomorrow, don't miss Radio Intifada, Voices from Calcutta to Casablanca, Thursday afternoon at 3. This has been another edition of Middle East in Focus. Join us again next week, Wednesday at 2 o'clock. Our board operator has been our production manager, Nathan Thompson. And my name is Don Bastani. Work for justice. Peace will follow.